and say goodbye to Banjo Pier. It soon gets smaller as we get farther away. That's when the sea feels choppier. Spray occasionally hits my face, and the saltiness on my lips is adding to my nausea. I check my phone again and see that I have no signal. We're alone out here, with only Cody to rely on. There's a radio that we can use for help if we need it. The boat falls and rises when he cuts the engine, and I can't help but feel worse now. The sound was acting as a distraction.
"Are you both okay?" I ask the girls.
"Yes, this is brilliant, Mummy!"
Rosie's cheeks are pink and her hair is already tangling up in the salty air as it falls from the ponytail I did for her before we left.
"Right, we have to catch a fish for dinner."
Damien stands and takes one of the rods out of the holder. He's been on one of these types of trips before, and the girls look at him like he knows what he's doing.
"Kate, are you grabbing a rod?"
I shake my head. "No, I don't feel good. Sorry. I'll be all right when I've got used to it in a minute." Fishing isn't my thing. I don't like to see them flapping on the end of a line, fighting for life. But Damien loves fishing. Cody turns around. My husband and children are distracted.
"See what a lovely day we're all having?"
He grins, and it's almost like he forgot that we bickered last night and this morning.
"Girls, stay behind your dad."
"It's okay, Kate. I'm right here with them. Let them have some fun. They're not going anywhere." He rolls his eyes. Cody's glare feels as though it's probing every corner of my mind, and the fact that he doesn't blink is unnerving me. I look away. I'm sure it was him who sent the message last night. I didn't see anyone else lurking around the harbor staring at me. He knew I was there. The more I think about it, the more I should focus on Cody. He was working on his boat on the day Jessica went missing. My focus has been on his father, but I have to keep my mind open at this stage, and my instinct tells me I should be scared of him.
"Kate, you're missing out on all the fun," Damien roars as he nearly catches a fish.
Cody pushes past me, and my gaze falls onto his phone. As he turns around, I go to grab it, but he turns back. I almost slip over, but I manage to grab the rail just in time.
"We've got a fish, Daddy!"
Cody reaches over Millie to help tackle the mackerel that is dangling on the shiny-ended rod. Swiftly, I grab his phone and press a button. It's an older phone, and it isn't locked. I quickly see if he has the Facebook app, but I can't log in. As Cody comes back with a fish and throws it in the bucket, I pop his phone into my pocket and hope that he doesn't notice it missing. My heart pounds as he rubs his head and looks at me. He turns back and sets Damien's rod up with a shiny lure. Without saying anything, he hurries through the door marked WC. So I pull the phone out of my pocket and start scrolling. His contacts are filled with names of people I don't know. But then I see one called The Brambles. That had to be a nursing home if ever there was one. There's no Instagram app on his phone. I pop the phone back on the shelf and push it out the way slightly to make it look like it had slid a bit. I catch sight of an invoice for a fishing rod that is stuffed amongst other bits of paper, and it's in the name of Cody Teague. The girls yell while Damien jokes around with them. I should join in, be more fun, make some family memories. But I can't. Not right now. Cody comes out of the WC, and he's doing up his dungarees. He stares around his boat and grimaces as he spots his phone.
"Have you touched this?"
I shake my head. "Of course not." He stares at me with a sour look on his face. He doesn't want me on his boat any more than I want to be on it, but we're both stuck with each other for the next hour. My stomach is all over the place, and the boat starts to turn and sway. I hang over the side in the hope that I won't vomit. All this stress is playing with my innards.
"Mummy, are you boat sick?"
Rosie grabs my hand. "A little, sweetie, a little. Don't worry about me.
You go and have fun with your dad. I'm all right.
Poor Mummy.
She gives me a clumsy hug from behind in her life jacket. I'm sick of this boat. I'm sick of not knowing who is behind the messages, and I'm sick of having to lie to find out the truth. I glance back at Damien and watch him being carefree with the girls. What I need is his level of simplicity in life. I glance directly down into the sea, and I wonder how deep it is. In my mind, there is no bottom, and I hold a tear back. Jess is down there somewhere. I have this weird feeling, like she's crying for me to find her. My tears drop into the sea, and I stare at the same spot, scared that if I look up or across, I will be sick. I just want to get off this boat and call the Brambles. Too many people don't come back alive. Those words hit me. I wipe my face. All I want right now is to get off this boat. 20. Kate. My heart pounds as the boat chugs into the harbour.
Mummy, can we have ice cream?
Rosie looks up at me with pleading eyes, and Millie turns to join in. It's nowhere near lunchtime yet. Maybe a little later, sweetie. I glance across the water, and I can see that the ice cream shop is in darkness, and the closed sign is showing. It's not open yet, see? I pointed it.
Oh, I want it to be open. Daddy said we can have ice cream.
We can later. Rosie drops her hands and scowls. Cody doesn't waste any time in hopping off the boat and tying it up. He gets back on and fixes the metal plank so that we can disembark, and I can't wait to set foot on land. So much so, my legs are like jelly as I hurry off first, clattering across before taking the tiny jump to the ground. I grab the girls in turn and help them remove their life jackets. Then Damien comes off last, carrying their fish in a small bag. The whizzing of wheels comes to a halt on the pavement above. Cody hurries off, nudging them aside. Hope you all have a lovely day. With that, he's climbed the few steps up, and he stops to talk to the woman getting off a bike. She removes her helmet, and a cascade of wispy brown locks fall over her shoulders. Her hair flows with the breeze, and messily half sticks to her head. Her lithe figure looks like that of an athlete in cycling gear. I glance at Damien, who I can see has clocked her. He looks away quickly and helps the girls to do their coats up properly. From where we are, I can listen to what is being said. Daisy, my love.
Got you a greasy sandwich, Dad. Plenty of bacon, just the way you like it.
Just in time, I'm bloody starving. I listen as he unwraps the foil.
Anyway, best get off. I have to meet Rachel at the cafe before I check in on Grandad. Got to give that baby a cuddle. See you later.
Send her my best. The woman rides off. As we climb the steps, Cody bites into his sandwich. His daughter looked to be about the age that Jess would be now. A shiver runs through me as I see the back of the girl I now know to be Daisy, taking a left in the distance. Cody sees me looking, and for a moment, I see something I haven't seen in him before. Worry. Is that your daughter? He nods as he zips up his bag, then he checks his phone. Damien grips the girl's hands as they stand near the edge, too close to the sea for comfort. Behind him is Jess's bench, but Damien wouldn't know that. He hasn't asked for the intricate details of what happened, and I haven't told him. I know that my dad and my sister were on that bench the day she disappeared. When we came back, my dad was alone. Cody sees me, and he too looks at the bench. He knows the story, as he too was here on that day. In an instant, I'm back there as a little girl. We've just stepped off the boat, and I'm whinging already. I glance back and see that the man in the pirate hat, that I now know was Mr. P, is telling me I should be good for my mother, but that makes me scowl.
There is another face, one in the next boat, peering out of the window, and that man has a stark stare. He's about Cody's age now. My heart begins to pound. I saw Cody's dad that day. He watched us getting off the boat. I have to see him. Kate? Damien shrugs as I stand there motionless. Sorry, I was in a world of my own. Rosie is crying for ice cream, just like I was back then, and I see what my mother was going through. She had a crying child and a baby.
Rosie, that's enough! If you don't stop this, there will be no ice cream!
My child is shaking, and only now do I realize how loud I shouted that. Damien shakes his head and grips her hand.
Right, let's go and get a hot drink and maybe Mummy will snap out of her bad mood. Shall we try the cafe on the seafront by the lifeboat station?
Rosie stops crying and nods her head. Millie has her knuckle in her mouth and a frown. Cody clears his throat.
I'd recommend the full English.
With that, he strides off in the direction of the ice cream shop and down a narrow street.
Nice bloke. Did we have a good day, girls?
Damien unzips his jacket as the sun begins to beam down. The further we move away from the harbour's edge, the warmer it feels. Now that Cody has gone, all I want to do is call the Brambles, but it'll have to wait. Daisy was heading in this direction on her bike. I wonder if she'll be in the same cafe that we're going to.
Yay! The girls shout. Mummy looked sick, though. Maybe that's why she's not happy,
Rosie said. I am happy, and I shouldn't have shouted. I force a smile. I felt a bit poorly. Sorry that I wasn't much fun. Damien places an arm around my shoulders, and Rosie grabs my hand. I hope he's forgiven me. The walk to the cafe is pleasant, and I'm thrilled that my nausea is subsiding now we're off the boat.
Shall we sit out here?
I see Daisy and Rachel on the next table beside Daisy's bike.
Yay! We can look at the beach!
Millie yells.
We sit and a teenage girl comes out to take our late breakfast orders, and for the first time that morning I'm ravenous. I lean back a little so that I can listen into the conversation going on behind me, but I can barely hear a word. Daisy knows who I am. I can tell by the way she looks at me, then whispers across at Rachel. They wave, and another young woman runs across, apologizing about being late.
"Oh, Bethany, got home late from a date?" Daisy points as she teases her friend.
"Oh, shut up. If you must know, yes."
The three young women huddle.
"How's the little angel?"
I glance around briefly and see that Rachel has her baby in a sling, and a wash of sadness comes over me. I'd like to reach over and hold the little one, just for a minute, and pretend that I'd found Jess. Rachel's pink hair has fallen from her clip and dangles on the baby's face. I long to go over and move it so that Jess isn't aggravated. I stop and shiver. That baby isn't Jess. How could I even think that?
Kate?
I glance up. Damien is waiting for an answer to a question I obviously didn't hear.
Sorry, come again.
He shakes his head.
Girls, you can go and have a look through the lifeboat shop window. Stay where I can see you both.
Millie grins and is soon off her seat and Rosie grabs her hand. I can't take my eyes off them.
I'll go with them.
No, they're barely 5 feet away. I can still hear everything they're saying. I'm capable of watching them while we talk.
Please don't be like this.
I don't need this right now. There's already too much on my mind.
Like this? It's you that's the problem. I don't feel like you're here. I mean, I can see you. You're there. But you might as well not be. The girls talk to you and you don't listen. I only asked if you wanted more sugar for your coffee and you ignored me. I know coming back here is hard, but think of the kids. They need you to be present.
I am.
You're not. You're either glued to your phone or in a weird trance. It's too much. my muscles tense. What is too much is coming back here where my baby sister went missing and not having your support. You said you'd come with me so that I could finally say goodbye. I'm trying, but burying the memory of my baby sister isn't easy when you take me on a boat trip that takes me back to that day. You don't understand.
The three women turn to look at me, and Rachel's baby starts to cry. They get up and go inside the cafe. I've lost them, and it's Damien's fault.
I do understand. I know that you're consumed, obsessed, and it's driving us apart. You keep going off on your own, gripping that phone like your life depends on it. I love you, Kate, more than anything, but right now I'm fed up. I wish we never came.
My head is swimming. Millie looks back and waves. I wave back with a smile, pretending that everything's okay. I'll put my phone away. I'm sorry. You're right. Maybe I need help. Some more counselling. It's just hard, you know? I thought coming back here would help.
Let me see your phone.
Damien? I tilt my head and my brows furrow. I can't let him have my phone. My browser is open. I need to deflect him.
Back at the harbour, you looked at Cody's daughter like a dog on heat. It's no surprise that I have a face like thunder.
How the hell can you say that? I thought it was sweet how the man's daughter brought him some breakfast. How can you even think I was leering? You're just saying that to detract from what's going on here. You know me better than that.
He's right. He wasn't leering or being creepy. I was out of order. I didn't mean, you know what they say about those who throw out the accusations? They're the ones who are lying.
Right now, I don't trust you. Here, have my phone. Look at whatever you like.
He throws his phone on the table.
I don't reach for it as I trust Damien 100%. I give up and place my phone on the table.
Please, Damien. I need you to trust me on this.
He shakes his head and picks up my phone. He knows that my passcode is Rosie's birthday. Before he looks at what I have open, he glances at the girls, and they're both fine.
I knew it.
He swallows and puts my phone back down. I know my Instagram was open, and so was the internet, and it was logged in and on my Facebook messages.
Who were you seeing at the harbour yesterday?
I go to answer, but before I can say anything, he's up off the chair and he has the girls' hands.
Right, girls, Mummy needs to rest because she's not feeling too good, so we will go and get ice cream.
They cheer and giggle as they're led away, leaving me holding my phone. I glance down and see the message he was reading. It was lovely to see you at the harbour. Kiss. Sent from Will. I've royally messed up. The server places a cooked breakfast, 2 slices of cake, and a cheese sandwich in front of me.
Hope you enjoy your food.
She doesn't stick around or ask why I'm on my own. The smell of fried egg hits my nostrils and my stomach turns again. Pushing the food away, I hope that no one is judging me for the waste. I want to scream that I've been abandoned. But no one will listen. As I stand to leave, I glance back and see that Daisy is about to leave. She hurries to her bike and walks it over to me.
Hi!
I glance at her and smile.
Hi, you're Cody's daughter.
That's right. Sorry if I'm out of order for saying this, but we all know who you are, and I read that article that was in the paper. Your poor dad. Having to live with that on his mind. I just wanted to say, I'm sorry for your loss. I know it was a long time ago, but you never forget. Coming back here must be hard.
A tear drizzles down my cheek. Thank you. That's really kind of you to say.
I glance into her bright hazel eyes, and her peachy cheeks are well structured. For a moment, I wonder if Jess would have looked anything like her. Then I mentally kick myself. All this second-guessing at what happened isn't helping. Jess is dead. And a few moments ago, I thought Rachel's baby was Jess. I feel as though I'm cracking up. This place is doing that to me. Every street, every turn, I'm back there. I hear Jess, feel her presence, and I'm angry that Will is messing around with me like this. What will help is if I find Will and have this out with him in person. If her father is masquerading behind the identity of a pirate, maybe asking will trigger Daisy into speaking up. I don't suppose you know anyone who goes by the name Will Wilcox, I ask her. Only the long-dead pirate. We all know about him, over this way. Have you been to Polperro and seen the cave? There wasn't a glimmer of anything untoward in her reply or expression. I shake my head. Maybe Will isn't prepared to give me another clue until I've cleared the ones that he's already sent me. I shake my head. What the hell am I thinking? This isn't a game. Maybe I should check it out. You should. It's gorgeous over there. I'm a teacher, and we sometimes take the kids there on a trip. They love it. I bet your family would have a great time. Go during low tide if you want to see the cave, and take plenty of change. The car park costs a fortune. You can't drive into the town. You have to walk, and it's a bit cobbly. Wear sensible shoes. Thanks for the tip. She checks her smartwatch. Right, I need to give my granddad's home a call, see if he's running out of supplies. My list of jobs is getting longer as we speak. Enjoy the rest of your week. She places her helmet on her head. Oh, and people will talk, and it might look like they're staring. They're not being rude. They do care. They just don't know what to say. I wanted to tell her that I thought her dad knew more than he was letting on, that he probably posted what could be perceived as a threatening comment on my Instagram. But I refrain. She's onside and friendly. I don't want to jeopardize that. Thank you. I know you're busy. That's okay. She throws a leg over her bike, one foot still on the floor for balance. Do you know the woman who runs the ice cream shop by the harbour? Oh, Natalie Thomas. Yes. Was she working there back then when Jess went missing? Yeah, she and her husband would have been working with his dad at the time. She's part of the furniture here. I don't even think she's ever left Lou before. Thank you. I'm trying to gather a few thoughts and I'm hoping to say goodbye to Jess while I'm here. Finally allow her to rest. That must be hard. Yes, you could have a chat with Natalie. She's lovely and always up for a chat. Have an ice cream while you're there. They're the best, especially the salted caramel. Daisy looks at her watch again. I have to go. It was lovely speaking to you. Maybe I will have an ice cream before I call the home. The shop should be open now. I'll give Daisy a chance to get her call done. I stare at the lifeboat station with its little gift shop, and I think of all the work they did when they thought Jess was out there. The volunteers had headed out into the sea, looking and searching to no avail. I go to press Damien's number, but then I place my phone in my pocket. He needs a little bit of time to himself. Then I'll come completely clean tonight. Once he sees that he's made a mistake, and that I'm not meeting up with some bloke, I'm sure we'll be okay. I gulp down the bit of acid that's climbing up my throat. It's not just about the message. I lied to him about why we're really here. It's not okay. We're not okay. I leave the cafe and lifeboat station behind and head back towards the ice cream shop. I'm going to wait as long as it takes to speak to Natalie. If she had nothing to hide, she'd have opened that door and welcomed me in. Maybe she and Cody are hiding something together. Whatever it is, I'm not going to let a mystery figure or a few social media messages freak me out. I'm on the edge of finding something out, and I can't let it go.
21.
Kate. An hour has passed, and the ice cream shop is still in darkness. The sign on the door tells me it should be open. I haven't seen a peep out of anyone in there, and that's not for the want of trying. In my desperation, I've knocked and peered through the window. I've stood back on the opposite side of the road, loitering outside the closed bag shop to see if I can get a glimpse through the upstairs windows. But the curtains remain closed. It's like the place has been abandoned. Post sits on the floor on the other side of the door, waiting to be picked up. Other people have passed by and looked disappointed that it was closed. The sky is a little greyer than it was earlier, so maybe the owner has decided not to open. But people are on holiday, and having ice cream is what people on holiday do. I know when Damien left me earlier to go for ice cream, my own two children would have been disappointed if they'd come here. The pull in my heart makes it almost skip a beat. Again, I've let my family down, and Damien doesn't trust me. I could find him now and say everything I have to say, but he needs time to simmer down. The best thing to do is to talk to him later, after he's exhausted the girls, and we can get some alone time. It's lunchtime now, and the smell of greasy chips and vinegar being carried on the breeze is almost making me salivate with hunger. My stomach makes an almighty gurgling sound. I give it a prod to try and calm it down, but my nerves are getting the better of me. Some of the boats are starting to sit on the sand in the harbour, as the tide has almost lowered. They've gone from bobbing to stationary while I've been watching, the ebbed water leaving a carpet of sand, stone, and tangled weed. It really smells like seaside now. Little rippled puddles reflect the midday sun, although it's not like summer. The sun is up there, but it seems like it's preparing to leave, as it keeps ducking behind the rain clouds. And there's a chill in the air that tells me winter is just around the corner. I zip up my jacket and consider realistically how much longer I can wait for Natalie to come back. I'm wasting precious time. I wonder if Daisy has made her call to the Brambles. There's no time like now to find out. I do a search for the nursing home on my phone, and Google soon comes up with the number. I press and wait for an answer. The longer it rings, the more my hands shake. This week, I've turned into a person I don't recognize. I'm a liar running scared. Not the best liar, but I'm getting better. That's not something I'm proud of. I've ruined the essence of what was us, and with all my heart I wish Damien was more on my side, and I didn't have to follow this up in such an underhand way. We've always trusted each other, but not anymore. And it was me who ruined that.
Hello, Brambles Nursing Home. How may I help you?
Whoever was on the other end of the call hadn't a worry in the world, given the upbeat tone of her voice.
Hello. Yes, what can we do for you?
I wanted to know how Archie is.
Archie Teague.
I can't help stumbling over my words.
And you are?
I didn't think this far ahead. I can't say Kate, as the staff might mention me next time Cody or Daisy visit. I blurt out the first name that comes into my mind.
Nadine. Archie's my great-uncle. I'm in the area. Is he okay since his fall? We were all concerned.
I remember Cody telling me about Archie's fall. That was his excuse for running out of the old smuggler when he saw me.
Fall?
Yes, not long ago.
Oh, yes, he's recovered now. He did have it bad last Christmas with his ankle. It's all better now, though.
Now I know Cody lied about why he left the pub. What else had he lied about? He knows something about the day Jess died, and other people know too. If he won't be straight with me, I will find someone who will be. I swallow down the hurt that is brewing within me. Am I sacrificing my marriage to follow duff leads and hoaxes? I can't be. There is something in all this. People don't watch and follow you. They don't send messages with a threatening edge, all because of a hoax. May I visit while I'm here?
Of course, my lovely. I'm sure old Archie would love a visit. He gets confused, mind you, but that's all part of his condition. Just come along, chat away and have a cuppa with him. He'd love that.
I exhale, a sense of calmness coming over me. Can I come later?
Let me check what he has on. Ah, this afternoon and evening aren't good. The chiropodist is coming today and we don't have a time for his appointment. I wouldn't want your visit to get cut short or for you to have to wait around. He's got nothing on tomorrow. Would that be okay?
Tomorrow morning? About 10?
After breakfast, perfect. What did you say your name is again? I'll put it in the diary.
Nadine Turner. I keep my own surname just in case I get forgetful.
We'll see you tomorrow at 10, then.
I end the call and hurry back to the cottage, my heart in my mouth, knowing that I'm going to have to tell Damien everything. As I approach, I knock. Damien took the key. All I have is a bunch of my own keys on me, and not one of them will let me into the cottage. No one answers, and the girls don't peer through the nets. They're not in. Pacing, I wonder if I can get in around the back, so I hurry along the path, and when I get to our cottage, I try the back door, but it's locked. I stand and sigh. A shiver runs down my spine as I hear footsteps that stop just around the corner. I'm alone on this path around the back, and I can't see who's loitering. Taking one step at a time, feeling as though my heart is stuck in my windpipe, I turn the corner. But there is no one there. I scan the car park and the entrance to the pub, but I don't see a soul. Then I hear an engine humming. There is a black, maybe navy blue, car that is parked way back, and all I see is a smeared, peachy flesh colour where the driver's face is. Swallowing, I know I have to get away from here for a while. This place is making me paranoid. I can't even swear that I heard footsteps now. Will Wilcox could be anyone, and he appears to know where I am all the time. A part of me wonders if I should walk right up to that car and see who's in it, but my legs have turned to jelly. But I have to do this. I owe it to Jess. As I stomp between a couple of cars, the car revs up and pulls away, before I have the chance to even see what make it was. I grip the keys in my pocket and head towards our car. There's no time like the present to take a trip to Polperro and see Willie Wilcox's cave for myself. That is where he wants me to go. So I will. 22. Natalie. Natalie blew on her hands in an attempt to warm them up, her car still cold. She'd wanted to go back into the shop and open up, but Kate had been there again, so she'd remained well back. She pulled her phone from her pocket and checked the Remembering Baby Jess page, but there had been no updates. Speaking to Archie had convinced her even more that what she had heard about Archie had been true, even though it pained her to admit that. Who else knew? She'd never look at anyone in the same way again. Her phone rang. She saw Laura's name flashing.
You okay?
Yes, I thought I'd see how you were. How's the hangover?
I'm a bit delicate.
The curry and the two bottles of wine had gone down well, but this morning Natalie wished that she'd gone straight home to bed instead of drinking.
Just thought I'd check. You were wasted.
Having her best friend back had helped. Maybe it was worth it. She'd told Laura most of what she knew, and Laura had done the same. They'd laughed into the evening, and it was great to feel like her old self again.
I'm fine now, you know me. Just in my car about to go and get some shopping.
I'm heading out myself. Got to grab some stock from Foy.
You haven't seen Bethany around, have you? She's meant to mind the shop. I'm going to have to close it for a bit.
No, sorry. If I do see her, I'll let you know.
Thanks.
Laura, about last night. I'm sorry for...
She didn't know how to say it.
It's okay, Natalie. You've just lost your husband. You're entitled to feel sad, and you have a lot going on.
As Natalie had walked along the streets in the dark to her home last night, her head had been whirring with thoughts of Mary and Alan. It had all become too much.
What are you going to do about Archie and what he said?
I haven't been able to stop thinking about it.
Me neither, and I don't know. What can I do?
She was no nearer to knowing the answer to that question, and she still didn't have proof of anything. She had a few partially heard words between two people, and she only saw the one person. She also had an elderly man with dementia half bleating on about hearing a baby crying at sea. Was it all the ramblings of a confused mind? Or was there more to it?
The things you said about what you think Archie did gave me the creeps. I couldn't sleep for ages when you left. Listening to him talk about the crying baby at sea, it was weird. Why won't you tell me who you saw that night, saying all those things? I feel like you've drawn me into something only to push me away. All I want to do is help.
I will soon, but I can't yet.
That was the truth. Lives would be blown apart, but what would it achieve? She had to be sure before she let it all out. Nothing would bring Jessica back, therefore nothing could be gained by opening old wounds with very little evidence. Then there was the fact that Cody was her friend, and he'd been a wonderful friend to Alan. Archie wasn't a bad person. The poor old man had suffered enough. It was a tragedy. Nothing more. But she also knew that Kate wouldn't see it like that. The family had lived with this lie for too long.
Got to go, or I'll miss my collection slot.
With that, Laura hung up on her. Natalie turned the engine on. There would be no ice cream sold today. She wasn't going to open the shop. Maybe she'd keep the shop closed all week. Kate kept coming back. And she'd keep coming back. Something had to be done, and it couldn't wait. She grabbed her phone and pressed Cody's number.
Right, Cody.
What's up?
What's up is that I went to visit your dad last night.
Oh, I told you he were getting bad.
I'm sorry. I hope me and Laura managed to cheer him up for a bit. He said something a bit odd.
He says a lot that's odd these days.
But this, Cody, it sent shivers down me. I need to talk to you in person. Maybe I can come by your place later. Or maybe we could meet at the Smuggler for a pint.
What is it, Natalie? Just say it.
Natalie swallowed.
It's about the baby, Jessica.
Cody went quiet.
It's Kate, isn't it?
She's got to you and she thinks that we had something to do with her sister's drowning. When will she accept it was an accident?
Natalie had to flush out more.
Was it, though? What are you trying to say?
Nothing. I'm not trying to upset you. You know I think a lot of Archie. He's a good man, but since his accident, he had those problems, dissociation something.
Yes, and he saved that kiddie in the other car. That's what he gets mixed up with. He pulled a baby from a car, and he didn't have anything to do with a baby that drowned.
Look, if you think my dad had something to do with all that, you can stick your drink at the pub and stay away. Oh, and Kyle knows about your Alan having his end away with his wife, so it's best you don't go in the Smuggler for a bit. It's all too raw. That man was absolutely gutted when I saw him."
Laura had told her that Kyle knew about the affair. So why was he so upset now? She wondered if Mary had finally confessed all to her husband. Natalie had read the messages where Alan was begging Mary to leave Kyle, and Alan was going to leave her. She swallowed down her upset. If Kyle had seen those, it would have been a shock. An affair that went on that long was more than a fling. Alan and Mary had lived another life.
"Stay away from my dad."
"Cody, I didn't mean..."
It was too late. Cody had hung up on her. Today couldn't get any worse. Cody wasn't happy with her. Laura was upset that Natalie wouldn't tell her who she'd seen that night, and Kyle was upset. If only she could leave Lou and never come back. She whacked the steering wheel over and over until her wrists ached. None of this was her doing. It was everyone else. Why did it still feel as though she knew so little? She shook her head. She did know one thing for certain, and maybe it was time for everything to come out. Then there was that one message, the one that sent Natalie's head in a spin. Did Kyle know about Rachel? As she checked her rear-view mirror before backing out, she saw Kate's car trundling through the narrow roads. The woman stopped to let a group of tourists cross the road. Did Natalie want to help Kate? Or did she want to protect the people she knew and loved? She thought about that question for a few seconds, and she had her answer. The whole town had probably known about Mary and Alan, and no one had thought to tell her. Humiliation burned her face as she let the handbrake off. 23. Kate. The sun has been replaced by some miserable-looking clouds that threaten to turn angry at any moment. I pull into the half-packed Crumplehorn car park and hurry over to the machine. Several cars follow me in, all trying to find a decent space to park in. After grimacing at the price, I fish for all the coins I have in my purse and bag and push them into the slot, buying myself the afternoon to explore Polperro. A tinge of sadness comes over me as I think of the girls and how much I wish they were here. They would love to walk around a quaint historical seaside town with me. I miss Damien and the reassurance he gives me. I'm alone, and it feels like it. With thoughts of him running through my mind, I have to call him. I know I thought some space would help, but I've pushed him too far. I can't let him go on thinking that I met up with some man. I press his number and he answers. Damien?
What?
I hear Millie playfully screaming in the background.
It's not what you think.
Really? I saw that message. Don't treat me like I'm stupid.
I would never do that.
Where are you? I glance around, wondering if I should tell him I can't lie, not again, no more lies.
Polperro.
I thought we were going to go there as a family.
Yes, trust me on this. I need to find out what happened to Jessica. That's why I'm here. That message you saw, Kate, I need some time to think. I don't know if I can do this. Us. Anymore.
I almost choke as I gasp.
What are you saying?
None of this is right. You lied to me. You're obsessed with chasing Jessica's ghost, and I'm fed up. It's not good for the girls. When we get home, they're going to spend Sunday with my mother, and we are going to have a talk. I've already arranged it, and she's delighted at the thought of finally having them over for a few hours. But I can't do this now.
He ends the call, leaving me standing outside the car park, hands shaking. With a red face, I'm on the cusp of bursting into tears. I finally pushed him over the edge, and he gave me no time at all to explain. Fanning my tears away, I try to stay focused.
A part of me wants to get right back into the car and drive to him, beg him to listen. He'll see where I'm coming from. He has to. I can't lose him. But I have to see this through. As I walk past a row of houses, most of them converted into bed and breakfasts, I catch up with a couple of people, and I hope that I'm following them in the right direction. I see shops in the distance, and very soon I'm there, passing a cafe, then an art shop. My mind keeps flitting back to Damien. I've hurt him, and it feels horrible. The lies I've told are because he stopped supporting me. Tiny, packed-in cottages line the paths as I enter the maze of Polperro. White cottages, blue cottages, vacant signs, fully booked signs. Some have little balconies jutting out, and others have large picture windows featuring model ships and cozy dining rooms. I'm transfixed. A terrier sniffs at my feet, and its owner pulls it away and continues walking. For a dreary Monday in October, this place is packed. For once, I feel safe. Being in a crowd gives me company, and no one will hurt me in front of all these people. My phone beeps. I snatch it out of my pocket, hoping that it's Damien. But it's Will. You need to leave now. Will has got me to come all the way here. I trust him when he says that he has information about Jess, and now he wants me to leave. No way! I've invested too much and jeopardized my marriage in the process. I reply. No, you should keep your promise and meet me. I'm fed up with waiting. Was it you watching me at the cottage earlier? You seem to know where I am all the time. Why are you doing this to me? My hands shake. A man carrying several bags of shopping nudges past me on the narrow path. I wait for a few seconds, but there is no reply. As I am about to continue exploring, I see another message flash up. You're in danger. Go home, Kate, before it's too late. As I go to click on it to see if there's more, I find that it's gone. Will Wilcox has gone. His whole profile has been deleted, leaving me with the earlier messages, but not the last one. The one that tells me I'm in danger is nowhere to be seen. He must have deleted it before I had the chance to open it properly and read it. I keep repeating that last message in my head, over and over, as I don't want to forget it. Before it's too late. Too late for what? It's definitely threatening. I should call Damien. Maybe the girls are in danger. I press his number, but all I get is his voicemail. I'll try again in a bit. I think of whoever was in that car watching me, and a tingle runs through my body. Maybe he's back in Lou, watching my family. No, I shake that thought away. This person wants to scare me, that's all. Damien won't let the girls out of his sight, and he can look after himself. He's strong in that way. They're safe with him. Whoever has been sending these messages, playing with my mind, knows how close I'm getting to the truth, and for some reason, they're trying to stop me by telling me that there's danger ahead. I think of that car, and the person who's been watching me, and I feel that if they wanted to confront me, they would have. They're cowards, hiding in darkness or driving off. My head is full of conflicting thoughts. One minute I believe I'm in danger, the next I feel that someone is playing a sick joke, and I'm nothing more than entertainment to them. Seagulls squawk from above, and I get nudged out of the way again by a huge family trying to pass. The children seem to range from toddler to teenager, and there are at least 8 kids and 3 adults. Before I know it, I'm swept up in the crowd. I hear them talking of Willie Wilcox's haunted cave, so I follow them in the hope that they will lead me to where I need to be. Will wanted me to see it, so I'm going to see it. He may have ghosted me, but I'm going to follow his ghost until I find out if Archie hurt Jessica, and if Cody has been keeping it a secret all these years. 24. Kate. After weaving around more tiny paths, I follow the family to a square with a restaurant on one side and a cafe on another. The restaurant is Nelson-themed, but all I can think of is pirates and Will. The image in my head of an eye patch and grizzly beard sends me a little dizzy. I haven't eaten today, and my stomach spasms. The cafe is in a tiny courtyard, and there are a few tables, chairs, and umbrellas by the door. The waft of frying onions and something cheesy makes me hungry. The restaurants are all open, and each one gives off an appetizing aroma. I gaze at the square and wonder what fun things have happened here in the past. It looks to be the hub of the community, with its posters advertising the entertainment to come. I feel sick with hunger now, and I know I must eat. Following the family into the cafe, I order a small Danish pastry. Then I wait and watch, hypervigilant of everyone who is around, each one of them possibly watching me. There's a man in a dark anorak and a woman wearing a navy headscarf. Both make me shiver. The worst thing is not knowing who is following me and sending the messages. Maybe the person watching me is Will, maybe he isn't. Maybe the messenger and my stalker are two different people. Or maybe they are Cody. My mind is still on him. I don't trust him at all. The large family with its lineup of children all take donuts out of a paper bag. Then they continue walking. I glance at another man sitting on a wall, and a woman catches my eye as she talks on her phone. I don't recognize either of them, but maybe they recognize me. Word is well and truly out about my being here, and maybe it's spread to the next town. That article had spread far and wide. One of the children shouts about the cave again, and I hear their mother telling them that they can go there now. The little girl's lips are covered in sugar, and she giggles with delight as she follows her mother. An older woman leads the way. At a guess, I would say she's the grandmother. The large man walks behind them, huffing and puffing as he uses his inhaler. Within minutes of walking past more shops and restaurants, I'm gaping at the most beautiful harbor. Surrounding it are houses that reach heights that make me a little giddy. I imagine the views from up there to be amazing. The thought of not sharing this with my little family wrenches at my heart. I wobble slightly as I'm transported back to that day on the boat with Jess and my parents. We came here. I remember mooring up and walking along that huge wall. It was the same back then, except the people now all have mobile phones. Some snap away with their cameras. Others sit on the benches. Fishing nets are hung up everywhere, drying out on boats, and on the path, just like back then. I take a moment to appreciate what's in front of me as I take a bite of the pastry, enjoying its buttery flakiness. Despite my emotional state, it's going down well. If only we'd known what would happen next when we got back to Loo Harbour. A bit of pastry catches the back of my throat, and I cough violently as I try to dislodge the crumbs. There was no point in toiling over the what-ifs. Jess died, and nothing will bring her back. The family keep chatting as they pass a pub and a jewellery shop. Polperro is a town that a person could get lost in for hours, taking in the coffee shops and having long lunches. But I haven't come here for that. I'm here to find out why Will Wilcox wants me here and how that relates to my sister. Something about this place draws me in deeper. It's a puzzle waiting to be solved, and only Will knows how it will all pan out. The family stall, but I hear them saying that the beach is ahead, and I know that's where I need to be. They stop at another cafe. That's where I leave them. I swallow the last of my pastry
Then I follow Key Road until I see a sign for the beach. My churning gut has settled for now. I carefully hurry down the steps, and my feet crunch on a bit of shingle on the beach. Small flecks of rain dampen my cheeks as I take a look. The lapping of the tide feels as though it's closing in on me. Then I realize that the tide is coming in. That's when I see the cave. It's nothing more than a dark gap in the landscape. A gust blows my hair in my face. It's as if Willie Wilcox himself knows I'm here, and he's conjuring up a storm to welcome me. A baby begins to cry. Then I see that one of the family I followed down is holding a newborn in a sling. One of the adults moans about how bad the weather is getting, so they turn back. Suddenly, I'm on my own, and the heavens open up. I glance back at the roaring sea, the surface of the water rippling with every turn of the breeze. Seagulls make the strangest of sounds, and to me, if I close my eyes, I imagine it's Jess. "I'm here," I want to tell her. Never have I been one to believe in spiritual things, but a part of me needs to close my eyes and imagine that she's guiding me through this next step. I've arrived, but I don't know what I'm meant to do next. Through the rain that slides over my forehead and down my face, I glance up at the house above. I read about that house. It belonged to Willie Wilcox, the pirate himself. I'm sure I saw a shadow in one of the windows, but when I glance up again and squint a little so that I can focus better, there's no one there. I think of Wilcox's pirating days. Smugglers brought in tobacco and spirits, and maybe many other things I don't know of. My heart palpitates as I think of Jess. Was she smuggled out of Loo, out of Polperro, out of Cornwall? Or even out of the country. Everyone wants me to believe she drowned. The police neatly tied up the case, and in my heart, I believe they were slack when investigating. Or maybe one big cover-up is going on. The sea can't tell me what happened. I wish it could. Only I can search for the answers. I don't want to be here when the tide comes in. The sea is giddying to look at, and while I stare, it almost sends me to the ground as I half lose my balance. The atmosphere is intoxicating. A gasp slips from my lips as I imagine the sea dragging me out into the bottomless abyss. I place my shaking hands in my pockets and turn to face the cave. I'm not going anywhere near the sea, and the less I see of it, the better. I'm going to have to go into the cave. My messenger may have left something in there for me. I take a deep breath, and before I know it, I've escaped the elements, and my rapid breaths echo in an unsettling way. Why have you brought me here, Will? I step further in, holding my phone torch out. Glancing back, I feel reassured that I can still see the beach. From where I'm standing, the houses on the opposite side of the bay seem almost misty with spray from the rain. Jagged stone frames the entrance, and layer upon layer of cold rock has formed in sheets of reddish colours and greys that blend into a bluish tone. Reaching out, I press my palm onto the cold, dead stone. The brutality of it is terrifying. Hostility stares back at me. As I step further in, the cave gets narrower, and I can't hear much outside. All I keep focusing on is my short, sharp breaths that threaten to make me light-headed again. As I tremble, the light from my phone flits everywhere. I'm unable to focus on one spot. I deserted my family for this. Kicking the rock, I flinch as my toe cracks. I peer ahead. From what I can see, I think I can go in further. Slowly, I creep forward, trepidation in every step. I read about the ghost that people claim to have seen in this cave, and I feel a shiver work its way up my spine, then my neck. My hairline tingles in a way that says, "Get out!
While you still can. Then my torch begins to fade. That message rings through my mind. You're in danger. Go home, Kate. My battery is going. Damn! I grab my hair and pull it in frustration before wrapping it in a bun at the nape of my neck. I can't see the beach, but I know those waves are lapping ever closer to me. It's getting late in the afternoon. Is Will trying to say that my sister ended up here? I imagine a helpless baby being cold in this cave as the tide came in to take her. A seagull squawks, making me shudder. I can't go much further. With the last bit of light I have, I crouch and stare at the rock ahead. In it I see faces that I know can't exist, but my mind is enjoying taunting me. My phone beeps, telling me that it's about to go, and I feel my stomach drop.
Why did you bring me here?
I yell, as tears roll down my cheeks. No one answers because there's no one there. Will was never giving me a clue. He was playing games with a desperate woman. I've embarrassed myself, and I've hurt my husband, all for this. I won't visit Archie tomorrow. I'm chasing fool's gold. People are watching me because no one wants me here. The loitering person was probably trying to take a photo of me to send to the paper. All I am is next week's news. Whoever was in that dark-coloured car drove off and was probably no one. I'm seeing what I want to see. It all means nothing. I'm going back to the cottage. I'm going to tell Damien how he was right all along, and how much I love him, and how sorry I am. Then I will hold the girls with all I have, and read them a story. My phone dies. And I'm staring into darkness as I listen to my sobs echoing. I flinch as I catch a noise so slight. I might have been mistaken. Then I hear it again. A slight shuffle of a shoe. As I go to turn, a heavy blow hits my head, and I fall onto a pile of stones. Darkness pulls at me, and in an instant all I can see before me are Millie and Rosie. My gorgeous little girls. And I wonder if I'll ever see them again. My vision prickles to black nothingness. 25. Kate. I'm sinking deeper and deeper. At first the sea was blue and I could see the sky above. Now it's as if the lights have been turned off. I hear Jess's cries, but my eyes aren't working. I can't see through the murky water that froths with every stroke I take. As I swim deeper in search of my sister, the icy fingers of the sea pull at me, dragging me deeper still. I know I'm getting closer to the truth. I reach through the pea soup water and a shimmer twinkles ahead. One of my hands grapples with strings, long grey and black hair. As I try to move my arms, it tangles around and around until I'm bound up so tight I can't move my arms. My heart revs up and I'm desperate to inhale. The crying is piercing. Jess needs me. I poke my fingers into anything and everything. That's when I feel a nose and an eye. It's Willie Wilcox. Deep eyes stare at me, but he has no irises. Only large, opaque pupils. I fight with all I have until I feel his bones crack as I push through. It's all so surreal. That's when I see the seabed. The crying lures me over, and when I get there I scream and bubbles fizzle out of my mouth. It's not Jess. It's Millie. Her reddish-brown hair splays out in the water, and her glassy eyes don't respond to my presence. The dream has gone as quick as it came. Can't breathe. Can't breathe. I'm shivering so violently it sends my body jerking. I cough the salty water out of my throat and sit up. I'm in the cave, lying face down with water lapping around my face. Coughing again, I expel more water out of my lungs and croak as I go to yell. My head throbs. I feel for my phone and pull it out of my pocket, and I remember that the battery had gone. I reach in my top and pop it into my bra in the hope that it won't get drenched. I can't see. Darkness has fallen, and disorientation is smothering me. Trying to get up, I wobble and fall as a wave crashes through, propelling a bundle of weed forward that slaps against the rock. The tide. It's coming in. And if I don't get out, I'm going to die. A sharp pain runs through my head and reaches my eyes like a lightning strike. I feel along the walls, but which way? The sea has now reached my shins. It's coming in fast. I have minutes. Or is it seconds? Did my messenger do this to me? Someone hurt me. My heart sinks and my throat feels as though it's going to close up. I keep coughing hard and all I can taste is salt water. Which way? I croak. A seagull squawks behind me. That has to be the way. Another joins in, and I feel as though Jess is there, leading me out with the seagulls. Her cries, their cries, are calling me, urging me to move. I wade through the water, unable to feel my legs for cold as I push through. Shaking the string of weed that has caught in my arm and fingers, I finally feel free. A vision of the pirate's hair of my dream flashes before me. Keep following the seagulls. As I reach the entrance, I know I have to wade and swim like never before. It's dusky, and across the bay, cozy houses in the rock face have their fires lit, and I crave that warmth. I've never trained for waves and extreme cold. My mind flashes back to all the nice warm pools I've taught others to swim in, and how the sea terrifies me.